Go to item number 19, the Executive Officer's Report.
Yes, I sent out a supplemental sheet to you with a paragraph regarding presentation of 15 minutes, right? From the Environmental Justice Coalition for Water and Debbie Davis, who I met before, and I'm assuming this is Benny Lee?
No, this is Horacio Amesquita from San Gerardo.
All righty, because I understood Benny was going to be here too. And my apologies for you having to sit here all afternoon. I did predict it would be after the lunch break, and I was correct.
So I do have a PowerPoint, but I'll go ahead and start just in the interest of time. My name is Debbie Davis. I'm with the Environmental Justice Coalition for Water. We are a coalition of more than 60 community-based and nonprofit organizations around the state of California, all working together to achieve water justice. And we define water justice as access to safe drinking water, access to high-quality water that supports healthy fisheries, that support subsistence fishing. We support water access for recreational uses and also for tribal ceremonial purposes. So I'm probably on the third slide. I wanted to point out to you that we, in 2005, published a report called Thirsty for Justice, A People's Blueprint for California Water. We are in the process of doing reprints, but it is available online at our website. Go ahead into the next one. So we are lucky here in California. We have government code that defines environmental justice as the fair treatment of people of all races, cultures, and incomes with respect to the development, adoption, implementation, and enforcement of environmental laws, regulations, and policies. It's a really broadly based section of code, and so we've worked with our community members, you can go on to the next one, to really define this what this means in plain language. And so from the environmental justice community's perspective, environmental justice means that environmental justice communities, and I should also say environmental justice communities, we define them as low-income and communities of color in California, and that those communities should have access to the redress of existing and historical inequities and disproportionate impacts. And that's probably the definition you're most familiar with. That's how it's been applied most frequently in the law. But we also believe that means that they should have protection from new potential disproportionate impacts, with a particular focus on avoiding cumulative impacts. So if a community has been impacted historically or there are multiple projects proposed that would have cumulative impacts, that should be part of the consideration. And then the last one is is equitable protections and benefits from state programs and policies. And that is a piece where the State Water Board has actually been making great strides in their policies that they've been using to work with low-income and communities of color. Go on to the next one. So the specific issues in the Central Coast revolve around safe drinking water and small community wastewater system infrastructure and septic systems. And we've just, EJCW has just started working more intensively in the region. And I should say, Benny Lee, he's actually a previous staff member now, but is the one who knows the region the best. I do statewide policy work. So I am not going to speak to this, but I'm going to ask Horacio Amesquita from San Gerardo to come and speak in more detail about what it looks like from the community perspective. And you can go on to the next slide.
Hi, my name is Horacio Amesquita, and I work with the community of 60 families in a child care center about 6 miles south of Salinas. And the community has been, their drinking water source has been polluted by nitrates and trichloropropane. And because of that, they had like 5 years of drinking water from bottles. But in that period of time, people were getting sick just by using the water from the showers. And so now the county is taking over the water system, and they're getting some grants from the state, about $3 million. And they're going to bring water to the community about 2 miles away from the community. But because of they're going to have this brand new system, now the community has to pay like 4 times more for their water. Like if Right now they're paying between $30 and $35, and now they're going to be paying $113. Some of those people that live there, they just live by Social Security or disability. That's all their income. So they're going to have real big trouble paying those bills. Also, we also have the wastewater permit from the water board. And the water board 2 years ago said that we needed to have some lining on the ponds and some monitoring wells. Well, that cost a lot of money. They didn't estimate it was about $350,000 to fix the system. And this is a very heavy load for the community. And the thing is that the synthetic fertilizer, when they started 60, 70 years ago, they've been accumulating. Now there's real high concentrations of nitrates and also other chemicals. And now, because the usage of those chemicals, now the people are going to be paying for the water that has been polluted. And it's the same thing on the wastewater. You know, the water has been polluted by nitrates and other commercial chemicals. And now if the water board wants to put a lining on those ponds and monitor wells, you know, the community doesn't have money to do all those things. So the point is that other people polluted the water, and the state is giving money and grants to bring the water in, but still the people are the ones that are going to be paying for those mistakes. So this community mostly are farmers. They started in 79. They built their own houses. And in 1990, those was two wells were polluted, and 201 was the last well polluted. For 5 years, they drink on bottle water, and they bathe with that contaminated water, and they had rashes, irritation of the eyes, hair loss. And some other folks, they have died of cancer. But we cannot prove that it was because of the water. So I wonder if there's a way that the groundwater can be monitored. Because so far, I don't think there's no monitor of groundwater, how it's been contaminated. And Salinas Valley is, every year, they get one well already contaminated, they close it, they open another well, and then another well is going to be contaminated. Anyway, so that's how the community is right now. Thank you.
Are you finished with your presentation?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Question for either of you, actually. I thought you mentioned, Roscoe, you mentioned the wastewater part of it and the lining the ponds and our requirements. I'm not sure about this, but I thought that there was a grant cooking for that as well.
Yes, last year we applied, but we didn't qualify because we were not a public entity. So this year, the way they figure out that we can qualify is by if we join with the district within the county, so the county can apply for those grants.
Right.
So there's an application going on right now for that.
Okay.
Can I just clarify, though, that application will be caught up in the bond frozen funding, so that will be somewhere in the future, but not right away.
Okay, thanks.
And where is San Gerardo exactly?
It's 6 miles south of Salinas.
Southeast of Salinas.
You have to go back.
Is it?
No.
South Old Stage Road?
Yes, it's South Old Stage Road.
So it's more east right than Chular?
That one? The other one? Well, that's the one?
In between Salinas and Chular, but up against the foothills.
The Gabalones?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I know where it is now. Thanks.
Yeah, it used to be a military camp, and it used to be a bracero camp. They used to hold like 3,000 braceros there.
Really?
Yes. Now there is just it's a housing co-op for people that didn't have a place to live. They build their own houses with $600 at the time. It was 79 and 1,000 hours of work.
Hasn't all the old barracks has been torn down that were there?
No, all the barracks were redesigned by an architect, which he didn't charge any money, so they just did the interior.
They remodeled them?
Remodeled it.
And again, recollection might be a little shaky, but the trichloropropane, Roscoe, you just mentioned old military facilities, and it seemed to me when we, the agencies, were trying to figure out if there was an identifiable responsible party, that, you know, the military was one possibility as far as that chemical. And I don't know if you have more information as far as the source of that chemical, since you live there, but
yeah, the chemical, it was made up by Chevron or Shell, I don't know which one of those, but what happens is that company did not want one process more up ahead in order to take that chemical off of the any like solvents or fumigants, any usage that they use. So the chemicals there, what happens is that it's not regulated by EPA. So according to one of the scientists that I talked to in Santa Monica, he's a PhD doctor. He says that chemical is very dangerous. And especially when it gets together with the nitrate, it becomes more dangerous. And so we don't know anything because the EPA has not put any regulations on that.
And actually, it's also been used as a fumigant. And because right. There are strawberry fields adjacent to the community, it's very possible that it's been applied. But again, because right. It's not regulated, we have no proof.
Yeah, that's what I was recalling, is that it was difficult to sort out because there were multiple possible sources. But you do have the treatment. I guess this is the well treatment system with the organic compound strippers, right?
Yes, but what happens is the county is running out of money, just like the state and the nation. And they're saying that if the project of the potable water doesn't go through, then they have to take away those filtration systems. Mm-hmm. And then what's going to happen with the people?
Mm-hmm.
Because it costs about $18,000 a month to clean the water, to get the trichloropropane and the nitrates.
Well, didn't you have a project approved from the state water bond for a new well?
Yes, it's
approved,
already,
but there's no money to give you out of that bond.
Because it's frozen.
Because it's all frozen at this
right. Time.
Okay. Dr. Hunter, you had a question.
Yeah, I just wondered if EPA was directly involved in this because of the environmental justice status.
No, they had a visit at the site, but they said that they were not able to do anything because the trichloropropane was not regulated.
And what about nitrates?
The nitrates, it was already showing that it was over 100 parts per million, so they know that the county and the health department permitted alcohol to allow people to bat, and it's not right. So
well, alcohol doesn't control that water system anymore, do they? No. Not since the bankruptcy has been taken away from.
Well, what happens is that ALCO, there's levels of how you determine what chemicals are in the water, and they never did a test for the trichloropropane. It was until 2003, so people probably were consuming the trichloropropane before even ALCO committed the fraud they did. They were falsifying those lab tests. So we don't know how many years people were consuming the water with the trichloropropane.
And who's funding the bottled water right now?
Bottled water is no longer there. When the county put the filtration system, the amounts of nitrates went to about 23 parts per million, and the trichloropropane was 0%. So the water is drinkable right now. And as soon as they put in the system, all the people, their skin became natural, their hair didn't fall, they didn't have no more red rashes, or everything went back to normal. But it's very expensive.
So county environmental health, do they have a role to play if the county runs out of funds? Are they going to kick in with any kind of action, knowing what they know now? I mean, okay, before nobody knew, but now the record is clear.
Well, I think the money already ran out from ALCO. They regained about $368,000 from ALCO, but the trustee took about another $400,000. So now there's no more money from ALCO. So it's up to the county and it's up to the state what's going to happen with the funds. So we don't know. And the bad part is that even the people that live there, that live under Social Security, they have deducted about $100 of their check from the state. So now they're going to have less, $100 less a month, and they're going to have $100 more to pay on water. So it's very difficult.
Thank you for coming and explaining.
Not
to
a
us.
Good situation.
Yeah.
No.
Thank you very much for sharing that information. Of course, I was somewhat aware because I've been following it in the local newspapers. I live in Salinas, so very familiar with the area and the situation. Yes. Your mic's not on.
I have one comment that I think we might want to consider a future action, but we do have some PG&E funds available, the remaining balance there. So it's something that staff can do to assess what is available at the board that we have discretion to use.
Well, that would be the question. Is that permissible to use some of that money for that? Access to that?
Well, the board can change its criteria. So something we can look at. I don't know what the balance is on that.
I'm not sure the exact balance. I think it's significant. Something between, I think, $200,000 and $500,000. And I think that the most compelling criteria is the proximity, the geographic nexus,
right,
which I think is Salinas. It's in this area, right?
Right.
You know, it almost sounds like this is not quite the forum to decide what's
right.
practical. Perhaps
no,
it would be better to go back to staff, and you could come back to us with some well thought out idea of whether we can be of help or not.
Mm.
Is it possible that we could can have that come before us at the next board meeting?
I think so.
Yeah.
It sounds like time is really a factor here.
Yeah. And maybe look at the state cleanup and abatement fund.
Yeah.
There might be some way we could hook into that. And I was also thinking maybe there's some funding we could get for their wastewater treatment issue. I don't know.
Well, they are in line for funding for that, but
yeah, but
funds are frozen.
That's
and a
frozen
dollar will get you on the bus. I mean,
yeah. Right.
Right.
Let's
right.
go.
Well, let's see if we can get some other money.
We got enough direction to the staff that the board wants something to come back that we can take a look at, and hopefully it'll be some kind of resolution and solution to help these folks out. So with that, Mr. Briggs, do you want to go on to your...
Can I just add one comment, really briefly? But we don't get Debbie Davis here very often, and so I really want to thank you for making the trip. And I'm also very, very glad to know that we're starting to see some activity by the EJ Coalition for Water in the Central Coast. And you and I have talked on a number of occasions about the need for more the good work that your organization does in this area. And I realize every organization is stretched so thin, and yours is among those. But we're going to do everything we can to support the effort that you're bringing to our attention. And thank you again for making the trip. And likewise, and please remind me of your name, Mr. Horacio. Thank you.
And Mr. Briggs.
Well, I'll also mention that Senate Bill 2X calls for pilot projects in both Salinas and Tulare basins over in Central Valley, and allocates, was it $3 million? $2 million for that purpose. And, you know, maybe there's some potential. They're looking for pilot projects, but maybe this would be a good pilot project. So there's that possibility as well. Okay, so speaking of money, of course, I think you're all aware now that we do have the three furlough days. You heard from Fran Spivey Weber about that situation. And one of the things that's different is that we are directed to shut down on the first, second, and third Fridays as opposed to having the floating furlough days. So we have 14-point-something% reduction in pay and staff time, which is pretty significant. And I've tasked the section managers with going back to the drawing board and taking a look. We had gone through the various scenarios with a couple of general fund cuts and with the two furlough days, and now we're having to go back and retool and take a look at the adjustments we'll have to make with the third furlough day. We just got the preliminary allocations for our budget, and my understanding is that there may be further adjustments based on the most recent cuts, but just to give you some perspective, the current budget, I looked these preliminary numbers, which apparently are going to be cut some more, and I compared them to the 07-08 budget, and it's a 29% cut, and which in itself is pretty significant. And you might recall that actually during that time, the engineers and the engineering geologists received pay raises. So actually our buying power in terms of staff is cut quite a bit more because we have quite a few engineers and engineering geologists. So it's probably closer to about a 35% reduction in terms of staff time available since just 07-08. So, you know, probably more than a third reduction.
Cut the fat.
Okay, then. Thanks for that direction. And let's see. I will be getting back to you. We've discussed a little bit during the break about rescheduling the September and December board meetings, and I do need the Ouija board for that. So I will be getting back to you with some different dates, and we'll try to figure out where we can get the highest attendance for those dates real soon, so you can get those on your calendars. And unless there are any other questions, I'll leave it at that.
Any other comments from the board members? If there's no further business, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you for your indulgence. Do you want me to sign these?
Yeah, please.